You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio and our Making It Accessible series to celebrate Global Accessibility Awareness Day, where we talk to members of the blind and partially sighted community about something they've helped to make accessible. Today, we are hearing from Ian McNamara, who's taken part in a few projects. Ian, thank you for joining us.
No problem.
So the first project I want to cover with you is when you helped with the My Health app. But before we kind of get on to your work you've done on that, can you tell us a little bit about what the app is and how you came to test this?
It's by the Clinical Commissioning Group. When I tested it, which was a few years ago, it was only covering South Birmingham. It's basically an app similar to like what you would have with your GP surgery. It allows you to book appointments. It allows you to see your patient records, all the usual stuff that your GP surgery app would allow. And I got involved in it because I used to be part of the Birmingham Sight Loss Council, and we were asked to work with them, the developers of it, to give feedback and check its accessibility for blind and visually impaired people. It was the first project I took part in for them, and it was also what led me into the job I do, which is testing websites and apps for accessibility for blind and partially sighted people. I did actually two things. Not only did I work with a developer to test the app and took part in live demo sessions, I also did, me and a colleague, we also did the podcast. One of us did the desktop and one of us did mobile, and we actually did a tutorial of how to use the basic aspects of the app, such as registering, etc.
So going into the actual, you know, demo sessions when you first sat down with the app, you know, what were your primary concerns or expectations regarding the accessibility of the app?
I didn't expect it to be as good as it was, and I was actually pleasantly surprised when I did the first session with the developer. He was very open to feedback. He made it clear that he actually wanted to know what the problems were. Like, he didn't want us to sugarcoat anything. He wanted to know exactly what our experience was. I was really pleasantly surprised when I started using the app, how intuitive it was. They were really clear that they wanted to know exactly what it could and couldn't do in regards to like how it worked, what I was reading. And the good thing about, because it was a live demo session where he was actually there, he was obviously hearing what I was hearing, and I was able to tell him why each thing was a problem. It was actually easier than just doing a demo and pre-recording it. It was actually nice to actually be there with him and actually be able to show him in the same room what the problem was, to help him understand how we navigate using screen readers.
For those who maybe haven't used the My Healthcare app, what does good navigation look like in a health context? And why is it so vital for this, you know, specific type of app?
Good navigation is important because for a screen reader user, obviously, we're not able to access in information. You know, we can't, like a sighted person, they can look at the app, they can look at the information and quickly skim down it and pick out what they want. As screen reader users, that's not as easy for us to do. So it's important that it's very, very clear and easy to read. It's important that the information is understandable. So for example, it says number of appointments booked this week, 25. It needs to say exactly that. Like, and if it says, for example, number of appointments, if it has all the columns first and then reads all the information, that's no use, because it means the person has to do more work memorizing what each of the columns are. Whereas if it says, for example, number of available appointments, 25. Also, it's important for this kind of app that the medical terms are explained somewhere, whether that's as part of the record or whether there's a separate information pack explaining the terms, because obviously for someone who isn't medically trained, they might not understand what the terms are. It's important that also when you're navigating the app, it's important that the navigation is simple. So making sure everything's labeled as it should be. And another important thing on regards to that is if you've got to select dates, again, it's important that it's clear what appointments are available, and it needs to be selectable elements. So for example, something like select the 1st of January 2025, and if it's available, then obviously have the button showing, and if it's not available, then make sure it says not available. The most important thing is, like the MyHealth app did, get user feedback as you're testing it. So get blind and visually impaired users involved from the start. And then that way, obviously, when you're coming to release it, you've hopefully got a lot of the problems sorted before you release your first release. So you've then hopefully got a good start, and then gradually you can build on that. Whereas if you bring an app out and it doesn't work to the required specifications for a blind person, and then you want to add it in later, you're obviously creating more work for yourself.
Looking at the final version of the My Healthcare app, and by final version, I mean, the version you last saw of the app when you used it, how much of the fingerprints of your accessibility feedback were reflected in the finished product?
The last version I saw, it was clear they had listened. They'd corrected the links that I'd said were not correctly appearing. They'd made it easier to book an appointment, like the dates were in a bit more of a easier way to understand. So rather than having a date picker with a calendar, they just had buttons with the dates, and you could go from previous to next month. It only showed you the ones that were available. So if the date wasn't available, it would say unavailable. From the first time we sat with them, my personal experience, I found the developer really interested. He wanted to know genuinely, like, he didn't want me to be polite and say something was good if it wasn't. He actually genuinely wanted to know what was wrong with it. I just remember being really pleased that our views were being taken into account, and this wasn't just a tick box exercise.
We will now talk to you about some work you did with museums to help with audio descriptions. And what I really want to start with is, can you tell us a little bit about how this came about and what sort of museums were you interacting with before we talk about the actual audio description work part?
Yeah, so again, it was with the Birmingham Sight Loss Council. We were invited to take part in a study, and it was working alongside a couple of the museums in London, which would involve listening to some audio described content and giving feedback on how much detail there was. I'm a big pioneer of audio description. Since audio descriptions come about, I've watched things that I would never have watched in the past. It was a project that was really interesting to me.
When it comes to evaluating audio descriptions, what is always an interesting topic, and I guess for museums' descriptions, it might be a bit different to describing TV shows or movies, but when it comes to audio descriptions, what is kind of the gold standard for you? Is it about the level of detail? Is it about the tone of voice or the pacing, or is it kind of all three?
I think it's everything. I mean, for me, it's about the important bits. So, obviously, for example, if it's an artifact, for example, I can't see what it looks like. I can't see the color. I can't see. I might not be able to feel it. It might be in glass cases, so we might not be able to touch it. Therefore, it's important that it's very clearly described. So, for example, the color, the shape, what it looks like. It doesn't need to be over detailed. Personally, I don't need to know. It's 120 centimeters wide by blah, blah, blah. But I do need to know the important information. So, for example, if it's a picture, what's in the picture, what the picture's showing, how it's represented. So, for example, it might say, like, one of the descriptive parts of the museum bits was of people walking. So it said two people are walking across an entrance hall, and it told me what each person was wearing. So things like that. It needs to be basically what I would want just like watching a movie, just like reading a book. I would want to be able to imagine that in my mind because I can't see it visually, and I've never had vision. So for me, I've never been able to see things. So for me, I actually like the more detail, the better. The difference between a museum type audio description to a movie, there is a difference because obviously in a movie there might be action scenes, there might be things happening that needs to then, and obviously that does need to be described really well. But in a museum type setting, for example, the case that the product's in, I wouldn't necessarily need that describing because I'm more interested in what the product is in the case, especially if I can't, especially if I'm not able to interact with it and touch it.
When it comes to describing visual exhibits, obviously descriptions can be subjective in terms of art. You're not describing an ongoing scene in the film, you're describing an exhibit. So how do you balance the need for objective facts when describing exhibits, like size, shape, and color, which you've talked about, with kind of the emotional feel of the piece? Is the emotional feel of the piece important to you, or do you stick by the fact that actually it's the factual detail that is more important to you, that you want to be able to imagine?
Anything we feel, anything we hear, it's going to generate some kind of emotion. So yeah, I think the emotional side is important. How does it make me feel to hear that description? What do I imagine without having held or felt this item?
When it comes to refining descriptions, so when you were listening to the descriptions and it didn't hit the mark, how did you feed back to the staff your kind of opinions, and how did you help them refine the descriptions to make them a bit more vivid and accurate?
Okay, so what I did is I listened to each video, and if there was a bit that I found I didn't understand, I asked the lady who I was doing it with. I asked her to give me more information on what was actually in the video, because obviously she could see what I was listening to. Like she could actually obviously see the visual parts, and I was obviously listening to the audio description. But the video was on screen. So I asked her to explain to me what was actually being shown in more detail. And then I would say, okay, this needs to be added. This detail needs to be added because it'll make it more clearer what's actually happening. So I was very, they asked us to rate each piece that we heard. So they asked us to give it a rating. I think it was out of 5 or 10. And we had to say what we rated it as, why we'd given it that rating, and what it would take to get it up to the rating it needed to be at.
How important to you is when you visit museums that, they actually describe to you the layout of the gallery, the space you're in? Is that important to you, or do you care more about the exhibits, within the museum?
For me personally, I do care more about the exhibits that are the room, but I do think it's useful to know the space. I do think it's useful to know how big the space is. As you say, it gives you, for me, as someone who can't see anything, as I say, especially if this is a place where you can't touch any of the objects. Obviously, as a blind person, you can get a feel. Like you can tell that a room's big by the spatial awareness you've got, like the echo. You can obviously tell if you're in a big room, like by the atmosphere around you. It's not as easy if it's full of people. It's one of those things with description. As you said, it is a subjective thing. Everybody's going to want different. Like people who have got other disabilities, who maybe haven't got as good a memory, have got cognitive issues as well as their sight. They might find too much description overwhelming to them. So they might not need as much. So it's about creating that balance between enough and too much. And that's why it's very important to get different points of view from different types of people, like people with high cognitive ability, like myself, and then people with lower cognitive ability who might need more or less. So I think that's why it's good to get a good broad range of users to listen to it.
Finally, what I want to ask you, if there's one developer, like an app developer, or maybe a curator in terms of the art side of things, listening, who haven't yet reached out to the blind and partially sighted community for feedback, what would you say to convince them to, start today?
Just because we can't see things, doesn't mean we don't appreciate it. If you want to make your content accessible, which I would hope most people would nowadays, we're in 2026. And I know that it is law now that all public facing services have to be accessible. It's all about your willingness to allow inclusive participation. That's the most important thing, because we all want to be included. You know, we're a society.
That is quite interesting, Ian. Sounds like you've done a lot of great work, to be fair. And I think it's always good to hear about people being involved on both ends. It's good to hear about people willing to actually listen to the blind and partially sighted community in their work development, but it's also great to hear people who are willing to help and actually make things better rather than just point out what doesn't work. It's good that people like yourself are willing to do it constructively and help to make things accessible for everyone else. So that is really good. Many thanks, Ian McNamara, for telling us about your various Making It Accessible projects here on RNIB Connect Radio.
For more interviews, features and shows, go to your favourite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.